Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Chicago-based jazz guitarist and educator Steve Knight. Originally from Olathe, Kansas, he has gone through New York City and arrived now in the Windy City. He opened up about his journey in jazz, COVID living, and his debut CD, the brand new 2022 album, Persistence. Enjoy the story.
Hey, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today. I appreciate it.
Sure, I'm excited. I didn't know about it. It's strange because I grew up in Kansas City, but when I was in Kansas City, I wasn't really doing this, and it's awesome that you're kind of hometown.
Yeah, right on. So talk to me a little bit about your Kansas City years and how that worked for you.
Sure. So I was born in Shawnee Mission Medical Center, right, in Merriam, I guess that is. I went to school in Olathe. Then I went to college at Emporia State for undergrad. In undergrad, because I had played guitar in high school and because I could read a little bit of music, which is strange for us guitar players, I got drafted into doing pit orchestra musical stuff. And then that led to getting into the big band in Emporia State because somebody had, you know, left or something, and they needed somebody who could read. And that started the road 20 some odd years ago. So yeah, but it was kind of an accident, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't plan to get into jazz or to get into really playing guitar as a vocation, but Kansas and Emporia State are definitely on the list of things that made that happen, for sure.
Wow, one of my favorite people on the planet actually is in charge of the writing program over there at Emporia State. His name is Kevin Ravis.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah. I don't know that it's been so long. I don't know. I don't remember that name, but that's it's a cool community. I don't think small liberal arts colleges are for everybody, but as a first generation college student who was told to go to college and that was really it, their kind of work and attention in that smaller community, I think I would have drowned at KU. You know, like I just didn't. Yeah. I wasn't ready for that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the one thing too is I actually specifically live in Lee's Summit, so the Pat Metheny bells start going off for people, and I've collected so many stories about Pat Metheny because of that.
Yeah. It's awesome. I play question and answer and Bright Size Life often on gigs, and people say, oh, you know, because he's not in our circle, he's known, but you might not know who it is. Like, man, that's a different tune. Where is that from? And I'm like, well, it's a Kansas tune, man. It's a Kansas tune. Because he's got that pastoral sensibility, you know, that's just, I don't know.
For sure. I'm still blown away by, you know, when I think about the annals of Kansas City jazz, I mean, he's getting up there with the whole Charlie Parker row. I mean, just the amount of respect and the amount of lore that he has and continues to get, it's pretty magnanimous.
Oh, yeah, you know, I think if you've got a Mount Rushmore of jazz guitar players, he's got to be on it, and there aren't that many on it. You know, I mean, and not to mention that if he just played guitar, that would be enough, but he also has written some of the most important tunes of the last 50 years.
You know, speaking of, you know, momentous things, you know, we're coming hopefully out of COVID, things are opening up, you have a new album, Persistence. I'm curious what this release means for you with kind of hopefully a new call on things in the world.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of a culmination of things for me, the first of which is, I've been playing and working, you know, I've been only playing and teaching guitar for the last 5 or 6 years. My wife and I lived in New York, and I took a lot of time there to take lessons with the real guys and hang out with the real guys. But getting it going on my own has been the work of the last 5 or 6 years since we moved to Chicago. And I had written some of these tunes with the idea to record in 2020. And I think we all know what happened. What that did was allowed me a couple of things. It allowed me a chance to write some more and to do some editing and things like that. And it also allowed me to start playing with the trio that we ended up recording with and playing with them in earnest as opposed to, hey, let's do this record, which I think is, I'm not of the caliber at this point in my career to go in with guys I've never played with before and have immediate rapport. You know what I mean? Like I think a band as opposed to a group of guys that get together who record, you know, you start to hear each other, you start to listen differently. So the 2 years in between 2020 and January of 2022, when we recorded it, was really a chance for us to work a lot. You know, we probably played 100 or 200 gigs between those years. And so in doing that, a lot of the stuff that I'm proud of with the album, the interaction that is there, was born of that. And even the title of the album and the title track was a song that I started writing in 2020 and I didn't finish until like 2021, end of 2021, you know, so like it took a long time. And that feels very much like the theme of COVID, which is, well, you know, you can be, not by choice maybe, but you can be buried by it or you can come out of it. So that idea of kind of still making music, still believing that this is worth doing, it has been a lot of what the year's been about. And being the first album that I've ever done, it's also meaningful in that way because it's kind of a, I mean, it's hard to be a debut artist at 41 years old because a lot of people that are doing the exact same thing I'm doing are 21 years old. I always kind of hearten that with, like, you know, Wes's first album came out when he was 34, 36, something like that, you know? So, like, there's some precedent there. But, yeah, so that's kind of where and how all of this came about and how we're kind of dealing with it as we go forward.
So, as your debut, you know, it's your first real shout into the jazz world. What are you hoping people get, listeners, those that buy and download this album? What do you want them to get from this experience?
I believe strongly that jazz is not American classical music. I believe that jazz is kind of relevant and can speak to audiences that aren't made up of musicians. Not that musicians aren't important. You know, there's a lot of navel gazing in jazz. There's a lot of us trying to play the hardest, hippest stuff there is in order to impress our colleagues and get them to hire us. And I want to play heavy shit too. Like that's not what I mean. But I want the average person who likes jazz but isn't like with it 24 hours a day like you, like me, to dig it. And so the are varied in style. You know, there's some easier tunes in terms of a way in. You know, something like Real Type Thing that people are going to recognize that style really easily. Some of the more complex things like Workshop or Persistence are more in the other way. But what I'm really hoping for is that people think, this is music I want to listen to. You know, there's some music out there that I really dearly love, but that I don't listen to very much. I want the opposite. I want people to, you know, move their feet, be engaged, be accessible. You know, jazz in general, I think we can forget about the audience sometimes, and I never want to do that. So I would say accessible, instrumental, new jazz, which is, you know, a mouthful and not great for a poster, but here we are.
So what was the first live show you ever saw? Was it in Kansas City?
You know, it's strange. I didn't see real live jazz until I moved to New York. It's one of those things where, you know, being in Emporia, because I was a music major, I was a theater major. I had a bunch of going on, and so I see like a heroic jazz show from somebody whose name until I moved to New York like 10 or 12 years ago. But it was a lot of that, you know, playing with the guys, playing with Emporia, playing with the faculty of Emporia, because there weren't that many. They don't have a jazz major or anything like that. So it was a small program. But I remember to the first. That I started it as a sophomore, I guess. So going as a freshman to the jazz band concert, I'm like, whoa, this is really cool. And there was a guitar player who was there who got me into all of this and kind of helped me out on the way in, you know, and just thinking like, this is such a cool avenue for guitar that I honestly didn't know about. You know, like I had heard John Scofield because I worked in a music store, you know, I worked in a guitar store. And so I had heard John Scofield. I think A Go-Go was his, had just come out or was big when that was happening in the late 90s. So I heard him, and I remember, it's strange now because he's like the top of the mountain for me, but I remember I bought George Benson's album that came out at that time. I think it was Tenderly. And I thought like, man, this is easy listening. No, it wasn't Tenderly. What was it? But I remember thinking it was like, oh, this isn't very heavy, you know, because I was young and let's say not altogether. Yeah, it was Standing Together in 98. And I was like, man, this is kind of easy listening stuff. And now, you know, Benson is it for me. So I didn't see a real live jazz show until I moved to New York. And then I just kind of saw everything, you know. And the first guy that I really hit it off with and took lessons from was Jack Wilkins, who's played with everybody. You know, he's kind of an elder statesman of the guitar in our music, played with Benny Goodman and everybody else, and was just amazed at, like, you know, you play jazz with a music faculty in Emporia, Kansas, and you're like, oh, I understand this music, and then you see it done for real. You know, the real thing versus the academic thing is there's a pretty big difference there in a lot of ways. So, yeah, it's kind of a circuitous route.
Man, Jack holds a special place in my heart. When I started the show, he was one of my first interviews, and I remember going through. Yeah, yeah, man. And when I went through his itinerary, I was like, wow, this cat has been all over the joint. And he was such a humble, like, you know, kind of a lower key cat too, you know, and it was just like, you know, he's just prodigious. That's all there is to it.
And that's the thing. Like, he's kind of like Tommy Tedesco or Carole Kaye or those people. Like, you don't know it, but you've heard him. You know, if you've listened to any jazz at all, you've heard him, whether you know his name or not. And it's kind of, it's not sad in the sense that he's fine and he's doing well and he's playing a lot, but like, I think it's sad that he's not a household name for non-guitar players. You know, I mean, that Merge album or Trio Art, you know, he was playing with Randy Brecker and Mike Brecker and Mike Clark and all these guys, and his compositions are heavy, you know, like he's got some serious stuff and couldn't be nicer. You know, like I said, I just went up to he does it out of his apartment in Upper West Side, and you know, you just go up there and sit, and he, you know, he's teaching you lines, he's teaching you songs, but he's also like, well, this is what so-and-so did on this album. And then, you know, like he is prodigious, but he's also got that kind of encyclopedic knowledge that you can only get as a true elder statesman of this thing.
So what is it that you like the best about being a professional musician? You know, you get to do this all the time. It's a daily thing. You get to create music. But what do you look forward to the most out of this process?
Oh, man, that's, you know, it's interesting. I'm one of the few, that's not true. I'm one of those that teaches not to survive, but because I care about it and because I like it. And so the teaching part, you know, I taught basic guitar lessons at a music store in college to kind of pay for college, right? So the teaching part has always been there. The difference in the last 5 years is that I've started playing to a pretty much equal percentage, you know, kind of 60-40 teaching to playing. And the thing that I like the most about it now that I didn't like initially is, you know, we have our rep is whatever it is, you know, 100 songs, 150 songs, whatever it is. In Chicago, there are so many good musicians that I end up playing. Like, the trio plays a lot, but there are often times when Jeff or Justin are doing something else, and so a new person will come in. And I have a list, you know, like we all have a list of calls. And I love how different the same song can be, even from night to night with the same people, but especially with somebody new, you know, or somebody that we don't play with every week. So I love that part of it. The other thing that I'm really lucky to have is during the pandemic, I started an outdoor music thing in my neighborhood to play every Sunday. And the neighborhood has really embraced it. It's become kind of a hang on Sunday nights. It has connected me to my neighbors in a way that in the kind of COVID 21st century just feels very uncommon. You know, especially in a bigger city, I don't feel like it's like, you know, living in Kansas on a cul-de-sac in Olathe, you knew everybody in the, you know, in the neighborhood. That's not the way Chicago and New York are. You know, you can walk past the people all the time and never see anything. So that kind of communion of people digging it and getting to know each other and coming out, that's really important to me because it feels like it's a way to unify in a time that is so kind of discordant and just separated.
Now that we've mentioned, you know, with things easing up and getting back to it a little bit with live music, and especially being, you know, in a place that plays a lot of live music, what do you hope we all realize about the power of live music now that we're getting back to it more and more?
That's a great question. You know, one of the things that I feel really strongly about is that the pandemic offered us some great things. You know, like I think of Orrin Evans doing a similar thing that I'm doing, which is like a front yard concert. And some of those concerts paired people together that I've never heard play together before. And so there was a lot of really great opportunity in that. Peter Bernstein did a series of workshops, you know, Zoom workshops, where he just sat in his living room and talked for 2 hours about music and how to play and how to arrange and all that stuff. So those things were great. My fear, and I hope that it is unfounded or ultimately unfounded, is that that online experience and the ubiquity of Zoom now doesn't make in-person live music less prevalent, because I think it's drastically different. And it's different in a way that the way that music feels in your body when the drums are right in front of you versus the sound that comes through speakers, no matter how good your speakers are. You know, so to me, the hang in person, I hope that better access and better technology to streaming doesn't make people think differently of live music. You know, I think of live versus streamed music as the difference between fresh pasta and dried pasta. I love dried pasta. It serves the function most of the time, but it's an entirely different food than fresh pasta. You know, like it just doesn't taste the same. It just doesn't have the same texture and whatever. And both have their place. So my hope is that as we kind of return and return, you know, in quotation marks, because who the hell knows, it keeps going up and down. And we've had several kind of Chicago's opening up, Chicago's closing again, Chicago's opening up, you know, and I think safety is more important. Like, that's great. But I hope that in like a worker shortage and what seems like a inflation driven recession and all these things that are going, live music has a lot of salvation for me. And so I hope that people continue to seek us out, seek it out as a way to kind of, you know, be alive together and celebrate that communion of people. I do think, and it's Pollyanna of me to say so probably, but I do think that music can bring people together of disparate viewpoints. And I think we can really use that right now.
I agree.
In every way.
Yeah, community's key. If you could get into a time machine, get into the Jazz DeLorean, and go see anybody in the history of jazz, where are you going? Who are you going to see?
Oh, God, that's a great question. I mean, if I have one, then I'm just going to go see everybody. But admittedly, that's probably not. But the guys that are on the my own personal Mount Rushmore are some guys that are totally like I would want to be in the Village Vanguard on Bill Evans Weekend on the Sunday sessions that with Scott LaFaro. That album was really key to me early on, and the sound of the touch of Bill Evans in the room is something I wish I'd seen. Wes Montgomery is, you know, all of us think Wes is the top of the mountain, and I couldn't disagree, and I would love to see him, especially on the when he was doing the work with Miles's rhythm section, Smoking at the Half Note, and then there's another one that recently came out from Seattle, Smoking in Seattle, maybe it's called, but that band and that album, you know, two Kansas people have now said, me and Pat Metheny have both said that that's like one of the most important albums in the world, and I agree with that. You know, but also guys that are gone, like Grant Green, you know, who just is another of those guys. Charlie Parker, of course, would be a big deal. I would love to have seen Monk, just because I feel like the energy that you get captured in video, to have been in the room, I can't imagine, would be amazing. You know, the other person that I think of big time is McCoy Tyner. And McCoy only recently passed. You know, he was alive when I was alive, and I just wasn't into it yet. But everybody that saw him talks about the kind of muscularity of his playing, and just how that, you know, like a gym trumpeter, a guy in town that I work with sometimes, he said, you know, it was like you were sure the piano was going to break, you know, like he was just going to split down the middle. So those kind of guys are off the top of my head. The answer, that's seven guys probably instead of one, but there we are.
So everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you're the one that's leading your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
I think that there's a, somebody said along the way that every artist, and specifically every jazz artist, has a certain percentage of poet and a certain percentage of athlete, right? So you think of somebody like Pat Martino or George Benson as being so firebrand and aggressive, and they also have a great poetic side. You know, you listen to Pat Martino play on a ballad and it's heartbreaking, right? Whereas Jim Hall would be a lot of poet and some technical facility, right? That ratio would be different. To me, I think I started thinking I was an athlete that had some poetry, and now I think I might be a poet who has some athleticism, because I have a little bit of technical proficiency, not like George, because nobody has it, but like the sentimental stuff really matters to me. You know, like I'll play, we've like Pure Imagination on gigs a lot, and it just like, you know, it kind of moves me. Just the song. I don't need anything more than the head of Pure Imagination to be like, oh, this is it. So, like, there's a little bit of that kind of optimist to me. I think it's one of the reasons I like teaching so much, because teaching feels to me like the way to really make a difference. Not to say that playing music doesn't make a difference, but you know, if I've got a kid that's crazy about music and is going to go out there and spread the gospel, he's going to reach more people than my CD is probably going to reach. So there's a certain amount of evangelical jazz evangelist to me, but there's also that kind of poetic bit where, you know, there are still sometimes where I'll sit and strum an open G chord and just be like, man, guitar is really cool. You know, like, it's silly, but it's absolutely true.
Steve, thanks for opening up, man. Good luck with Persistence. Good luck with the live shows. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Chicago, New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the world giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Steve for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.